Jack, I'm super excited that you're here with me today. Welcome. We're in my parents' house or apartment in DC, and we've set a studio up in my bedroom. So I'm excited that you're here because I don't think I've ever had you over at our parents' house. So
thanks for being here. First time.
Awesome. It's good to be here. Well, let's start with just like a quick intro. Obviously, I know who you are, but for anybody who's listening, maybe name, pronouns, and then a quick one-line bio of some kind.
Yeah. So Jack Manchester, he, him. And I don't know, a quick bio. I mean, I was a swimmer for a really long time, and now I'm, in DC doing research and writing papers. So that's
a continuation of college.
Yeah, basically, I just get paid now, which is nice.
That is nice. You don't have to pay them to write papers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Awesome. So in college, you were a couple years above me. I think you're 2 years above me, right?
Yep.
And I remember when I first joined the team, Kevin, our coach, had actually asked me, it took me a while to figure out that I wanted to join the men's team because I was so afraid of what that meant. And, not knowing anybody else on the team at the time, it was very daunting. I had, never spent a lot of time with a bunch of guys in college.
Yeah.
So Kevin had said, Skylar can be a part of the men's team. And I know he talked to you all first, but for the audience quickly, could you tell who is Kevin?
Yeah, so Kevin was our head coach for all 4 years for me and for you too.
Yeah,
he's still there, and I think he actually just won Ivy League Coach of the
Year.
Yeah,
he did.
So yeah, hey, big shout out, Kevin.
He said when I actually said, okay, yes, I want to be on the men's team, he said, let me talk to the guys. Mm-hmm. And so he went and talked to you all. Do you remember that conversation at all?
Yeah, it was you walked into the locker room and was like, does anyone have any problems with this? Mm. And no one had any problems. And it kind of moved pretty quickly from there.
There was, I guess it, some people being a little like just kind of taken aback. So it was just a new thing.
Right. To be honest, you are so incredible and you're very outgoing and very easy to talk to. So it made everyone super comfortable with it, I think, pretty quickly.
Mm. Do you remember what you felt when he first presented the idea to everybody? How did he email it? I know sometimes he just like wanders into the locker room. So
it was a wander into the locker room kind of situation. I think we like had a meeting. So, everyone's going to the locker room. It's at first it was just, it's just a new thing. So I was like, okay, I guess we're doing this. Yeah. And I didn't really know what to think about it at first because, I hadn't had very many interactions with trans people.
Had you had any?
One or two, but also, maybe more that I just didn't know about.
Sure.
But never in like an athletic context, just kind of normal interaction kind of context.
Right.
And this was just kind of a new thing. So it was just like, okay, I wonder what this is going to be like.
Right.
And then you train really hard and are just an all around great guy. So kind of set everyone at ease really quickly. Cause you just don't know. I mean, anyone who's added to the team, you don't really know what to expect from them at first.
Right.
I
think there's a lot of skepticism when there's new people. Right. And I think especially like the freshmen, I think people are excited. There's like this, I don't know, having eventually been an upperclassman on the team too. I think there's this like excitement for the new guys on the team, but a little bit of like, I don't know if skepticism is the right word, but hesitance because we mm-hmm. don't know them.
Yeah.
So I imagine that was the case with me, but there was this sort of added layer.
Yeah. I guess, that's probably a good way of putting it, that it was just, and it's just like a different thing.
Right.
From what, I was used to.
Sure.
But it was never like it was never seen as like anything bad or wrong or anything like that, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then also, you came in and we were also really fast too, which is always great. That's just the new thing about whenever, like we were just saying, like with freshmen coming in, it changes the team dynamic. Right. The freshman class kind of set the tone. It's now a quarter of the team.
Right.
So
our class was also big. We had, 10 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 10 guys.
A third of the team.
Yeah. We were a third of the team.
it's, you kind of want those guys to, you always want them to be like your class, but all the classes are different.
Right. Right.
And which is a good thing.
Yeah.
So you're always kind of curious, like wonder what the team dynamic's going to be like now, what's going to change with what. To be honest, I thought everyone on our team was pretty great. Like class wise, we had some great guys.
Yeah. I wonder, I know that there were people on the beginning, especially, that struggled with my presence there. And we don't have to name any names, but I'm curious if you remember, you know, I remember the beginning being called the wrong pronouns several times. And there was some stuff my freshman year, we can get into it later, that it was difficult for me. But I'm curious if you have memory of like witnessing any of that, or if like what your memory it was of people's reception of me generally. Again, you don't have to like say anybody particular, but
no. And I won't put anyone on blast, but no, there was definitely a few times, misgendering. I think that was probably the big one.
Yeah.
And I think people got very good at correcting people, mm-hmm. and it was always, you know, shit.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to curse on this?
Yeah, you can, okay. You can say whatever.
Be like, oh shit, you know? And I think that kind of varied, and maybe among like certain company, like people wouldn't push back as hard trying to correct at first. Mm. But then, you know, once you were more like a part of the team, you know, through a little bit of time, you know, more established on the team, mm-hmm. I would like to also hear your experiences, if it changed over time and got better.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it got better. I think the first year was by far my most difficult year. Yeah. And I remember just being terrified. I think it was so, you know, not only new, because there was just people I didn't know very well. But it was also just that I was afraid of what people thought of me. I wanted to be man enough. I wanted to be included. I wanted to belong. You know, I had never cared before then. I'd only cared about swimming insofar as it made me good, right? I just wanted to practice to be good. And I think when I joined HMSD, when I joined our team, that was the first time I was like, I want to belong somewhere. I want to actually belong on a team. And so that, combined with the fact that it was a men's team and that I am a trans man, I think made me like really think about my masculinity, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard not to when you've got a bunch of rowdy guys screaming, yelling, and, you know, like lifting weights and stuff like that.
Exactly.
I mean, honestly, so there was a time, I don't know if you remember this, but mm-hmm. you and I both had shoulder problems.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah,
yeah. And we were doing a kick set together, yep. an underwater set. Yep. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I have such a clear memory of that set.
Yep. Yeah, it was not a fun set.
Yeah, tell me about it.
No, I mean, it was the first time I think that you and I were really training together, because you were doing a lot of breaststroke and also backstroker. So
right.
for people who aren't swimmers, that means you don't train as much together for like main sets and things like that.
Right.
But I remember, you know, we were just pushing each other.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I was like, oh, damn, he can swim. He's you know, working himself. So that was, you know, as much as men's teams, you kind of end up like having to earn respect in some ways. Sure. And for me, that was a big, like, you know, you work hard and you're a really good swimmer, kind of mm-hmm. earn your respect kind of thing.
I remember that set. I was scared of you. I mean, at the time, so you were 2 years older, you were a junior then, and I was a freshman. And I felt so like that was another layer that you just brought in my shoulder. So I had torn a couple of things in my shoulder. You had also had shoulder problems. And mine wasn't going to get better, right? Mine only got worse after that. But I not only was feeling I couldn't belong on the team because I was trans, but I also was like, I can't even practice with everybody else. So mm-hmm. anyways, I one day, cause you had then started your shoulder problem as well, we did that underwater set. That was so hard. I still remember the whole set today. Do you remember like the actual set?
I don't remember it in its entirety, but I know that there wasn't a lot of breathing.
There wasn't a lot of breathing. We were doing, it was 4 25s, which doesn't sound that bad. So yeah. For anybody who's not a swimmer, that's 4 lengths of the pool. You do them individually, but you can't breathe the whole length. We did four sets of that. And then we did that, I think it was like 6 times.
Yeah.
And we started at like an easy interval. I mean, it went down all the way to 4 on 20.
Yeah.
And that was horrible.
It was not fun.
But I remember it was probably the second to last round. So the second to hardest round. And I was ready to give up. I was like, I can't do this. And you were like, no, you have to. Like, you looked at me, you were so intense in that moment. And you were like, no, you have to. And I think what did you say? You said you were something like, when we get injured, we don't work less, we have to work harder or something. You said something to me like that.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh crap, I gotta do this. And so we did, we both did it. Do you remember that moment where you said
yes,
that?
Yeah, no. And this is, you know, a big point where I was like, wow, like, you know, cause it's tough and it's very easy to, on those underwater sets, like, I can breathe.
Yeah.
You know, like, how am I supposed to keep going?
Yeah.
And, like having people like pushing you, you know, and like, that's what I think being a good teammate is too.
Yeah.
Being like, no, we're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, cause sometimes you just need like a little bit of like, we're just going to do it.
Yeah.
You know? But, and I had, you know, a lot of teammates were like that for me who were older and, you know, kind of wanted to do that for younger guys too. So, and you said yes, which people don't always say yes. Some people are like, no, you know, and it's easy to say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I felt called to step up in that moment. And I think a lot of things converged for me in that moment. And it's funny because I always remember that set, but you and I think because we didn't overlap a whole lot in college, right? We only had 2 years together. My first year, I was so like, I don't know, deer in the headlights. I feel like we didn't connect a ton past that set.
Yeah.
And after you graduated and it was my senior year, there was, we had like a pre-season team get together and we were hanging out. And I remember you coming up and telling me, hey, do you remember that set?
Yeah. I still think about that set.
Yeah. And you came up to me and told me that. And it was so interesting. I think, you know, to your question earlier about finding belonging over time on the team, I think I found every year it got, you know, markedly better, my senior year being definitely the best. And then actually, even since leaving, I have a even stronger sense of belonging, I think, on the team or with guys that I've still connected with. I was just curious, actually, if that was similar to your experience, if like that was a similar trajectory for you.
Yeah. I mean, so I think you get so close to this group of guys and you kind of go out into the world and, you know, you make new friends or, you know, you're in a different city from everyone. Luckily enough, there are a few guys still here in DC, so yeah. I get to see them. And there's a few guys in Boston too.
Yeah. We got, you know, DC, Boston, New York, I think have like okay crews.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, it's, maybe I'm speaking for too many people, but you don't feel as close to a lot of people because you didn't go through this kind of formative like college years and then like training too, I think is a huge part.
Yeah.
Like struggling through sets together and having that shared kind of, I don't know.
Challenges.
Yeah.
Well, we're also spending, you know, more than 20 hours a week at least together because we're 20 hours in the pool period.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, the half an hour in the locker room before and after. So there's now you've got, you know, an added hour every practice. And so I feel like it's a ton of time, at least as much as like a full-time job.
Yeah. I think in college too, people were like, oh, there go the swimmers. And it'd just be like a group of like 20 guys.
Yeah.
Like eating together, you know, going out drinking together.
Sure.
You know, all of that. Yeah. So you get really close to people and then you graduate and you're like, so just recently got to go to one of our best friends' weddings and you know, it was incredible. And you know, it's so great to see your friends like kind of growing up and like, you know, changing. I don't know, life changes, but you know, they're still like your best friends.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah. No, I saw all the photos from that from your class all going. I think it was so beautiful because you all went halfway around the world.
Yeah.
Or just not halfway, the whole way. I'm curious, kind of going back to that moment when Kevin was talking to the team. I'm so curious about that moment because I've actually really never gotten to talk to any of the guys who were there about this. I just never thought to ask. But Kevin came to me probably about I don't know, a week after that conversation. I think he had actually talked to you all maybe even before he talked to me. I can't remember the order, but basically he came to me and he was like, everybody says it's fine. And I was like, what do you mean everybody says it's fine? Like what does that mean? And he's like, well, I just said, I talked to the team and nobody has any problems. So we'll go for it. And so I've always just been like, I can imagine the guys being there and I can imagine if somebody had a problem, they would say something because I feel like we have a pretty talkative team.
Yeah.
But I'm curious if like, and again, share what you feel comfortable sharing. If people then, when they left that conversation, if they talked more about it, if people were like, what was the atmosphere like, I guess? I don't
know
if that question makes sense.
So I think it was probably, you know, people left and there was definitely a lot of people being like, I guess, like, I'm okay with it. Like,
right.
You know, there's no real reason I'm not okay with it.
Right.
You know what
I
mean?
Yeah.
And so there was some of that, but there wasn't like a ton of pushback or anything. It was like, it was kind of sudden.
Mm.
I mean, none of us had known anything about it until that meeting.
Sure.
And
Kevin just came in and was like, there's a trans guy. What do you think?
And pretty much.
He's a pretty like straight to it kind of guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's walked in, sat everyone down and was like, Skylar's going to join the team. Is that okay with everyone?
Mm.
And, no one said anything. He goes, all right. And then he just walked out and we're like, all right. And so, I mean, and of course people were like, oh, you know, kind of sudden, but.
Right. Well, before I joined the team, somebody told me this actually, I think it was like like an offering to me. Kevin was like, well, we've had openly gay people on the team before. Mm-hmm. And that's actually something the women's team hadn't had. Right. When I had come out to Steph, the women's coach, she was like, I mean, she was very supportive of me. She was like, yeah, let's do this. Like, we'll figure it out. You know, I support you, but I don't know any trans people. And the team has never had openly gay people either. And I was like, wow, that's going from 0 to 100. Mm-hmm. When I talked to Kevin, he was like, well, actually we've had openly gay folks on the team. Right. One of the things I think is beautiful about the team that I was told before I joined is actually that I was told some version of that story, which was that the guys didn't care that people were whatever actually on the team, as long as they did two things. One, did good in school, and two, tried in the pool. And I think that was actually something that even you told me the first time I met the whole team was at a pre-frosh weekend. And I went around asking everybody on the team if they would be comfortable with me being on the team.
Yeah, I remember.
I guess I could be even more frank. I actually went around asking everybody on the team. Do you remember the question I asked everybody?
No, but I remember you walking around.
Yeah. Yeah. I walked around the whole team. We were at like a party of some kind, and I asked every single guy on the team if they'd be comfortable with me being on the team. And the way I asked them, because I was silly, was, will you be comfortable with me being a man on the team without a penis?
Oh, yeah. No, I remember that. I asked
everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why that was the way I decided to ask the question, but yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that weekend?
Oh, I mean, those weekends are always a very good time and a great way to start bonding with all of the, right, you know, freshmen coming in and everything.
Yeah.
And, I mean, again, what was your responses from everyone? Were everyone just like, sure?
Most people were just, yeah. I mean,
we're taken aback by
most people. I think,
yeah.
I think most people, actually, I don't think people were that surprised. I mean, it might have been, you know, the tenor of the night.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say, I think.
But I think that.
It's not abnormal for us to walk up to each other and just start.
Yeah, people ask people all kinds of questions. And I think that was something that actually emboldened me, because I felt that people were comfortable to some degree with me asking questions like that. Most of my answers I got plain like, sure, kind of answers. And Sean's answer actually is the one I'm sure he'd be fine with me. His answer is the one I remember the most, because he laughed and he was like, of course, why not? and was just like, there was like a jovial sort of like, why not kind of vibe from people, which always surprises me even when I go back and remember it. But I mean, that's been a consistent way that I think the team has received me in many ways. And I think kind of to an earlier point that you had said, I think when there were mess ups, I think the team responded really well in terms of like adjusting. So you might remember or know where I'm going with this, but there was a particular Christmas that we had.
We had a month off, where it's not a month off for us because we just had to swim for a month and there's a lot of swimming and not a lot of anything else.
Yes. Yeah. And mostly we're just like hanging out. So we fill the time. Right. And one of the things, can you explain what Secret Santa is supposed to be? Because we do a different type of Secret Santa. So do you remember exactly what that meant?
Well, Secret Santa was more like you get like gag gifts,
right?
Joke gifts, stuff like that.
Yeah.
For like, so everyone gets a person on the team and you get them something.
The main point of our type of Secret Santa was a roast, right? It was supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be silly. Some people took it too far, but mostly it was funny. And you jabbed at people in a place that, like, I think for the most part, people were aware that was the funny thing on the team. For example, I was obsessed with taking pictures of clouds for most of college and sunsets. And so somebody would, like, I think one year I got a bunch of something that had to do with clouds because people were making fun of me for the clouds.
Yep,
whatever.
Yep.
So it was supposed to be, and I knew, like, it was funny because I knew that was something that people made fun of me for. It wasn't a big deal, whatever, right? So generally speaking, a roast was supposed to be silly, not take it too far, but every once in a while happen.
Mm-hmm.
So this was my second year on the team, because I was living in the quad, mm-hmm, where you all were.
Mm-hmm.
I actually went back and read the journal entry before before we had this conversation. And I was last, like, or rather I received my gift last. And the person who had, the guy who had my, had me stood up. He looked around the room and he said, here's some wieners. And he threw them at me. And he said, because it's fun to pretend. And right. So sausages, wieners, right. We tracking hopefully the joke,
yep,
quote unquote joke. And he threw them to me. I remember catching them and the room being silent. Nobody laughed. Nobody said anything. I caught them. I looked at him. I looked around and I laughed because I didn't know what else to do. And in the moment I was like, I was panicking, honestly. And the thoughts that went through my brain were, oh my God, does he really see me this way? Like essentially not man enough. That's what my brain translated. Does everybody see me this way? All eyes are on me. If I don't laugh, then I'm going to look like some kind of coward. I'm going to look like, you know, some kind of like, I'm not man enough. It's going to add to this whole problem. That's the start to this. So I laughed. And when I did, everybody else laughed as well. And that I was the last person to go. So it was a very weird vibe after that. And everybody kind of hung out for a bit and I left. I went back to the quad where I lived, cried a lot, called a couple of my friends, and I decided, cause I was just like, I was so conflicted about what to do. I was like, do I tell the team I'm upset? Do I write them an email? What do I do? Because I so badly didn't want to come off as like somebody who couldn't take a joke, mm-hmm. you know? So I wrote an Instagram post, actually. I wrote an Instagram post, and I think, I mean, you remember this, I'm sure, but for anybody who doesn't, which is most people, I wrote an Instagram post, and I purposely did not name the person. I didn't say it was a teammate. I actually said it was just a friend, and I didn't say anything particular about it. I just said a friend made fun of me for not having a penis, basically. And then the following morning, I received a text from somebody on the team who said, the guys are upset that you put this person on blast on the internet. I think we should call a team meeting. I don't think this was okay. I'm sorry. This guy was telling me, I'm sorry, I didn't stand up for you. I think what happened is wrong. You shouldn't have to stand up for yourself. Let's call a team meeting. So we did. And I'm curious because I know that you also were, you know, on the team at the time. Mm-hmm. And I, yeah, I'm curious, like, you know, what your memory of it was. I'll explain the team meeting in a moment, but up until this point, kind of where were you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember this. This definitely, yeah. And I, again, like, this is just being a bad teammate at times, and, you know, I can't.
No, I don't think you're
bad. I probably should have, we should have stood up and, like, you know, it was pretty clear to everyone that it made you very upset. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely a joke that went way too far. Mm-hmm. We should have probably handled it differently. And making an Instagram post is like, you know, not that bad of a thing. Like, mm-hmm. You know, it's like not something to get super upset about.
But I get it, because like what happened, and it's not that, I think that that you all should have gotten mad at me for making posts. That's a side, we're, you know, way past that now. It's more that like that was the outlet that I felt that I had. Mm-hmm. And so when I'll explain what happened on the team, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts, because when that guy called the team meeting, had the team meeting, I actually went and saw the guy who had thrown the sausages in the first place first, and had a great conversation with him. We can, you know, move past that. The team meeting, the guy who called the meeting explained why this was wrong. He had gotten my consent to do that as first. And then he says, Skylar, do you want to share anything else? And I stood up and I said, I want everybody to know that I wasn't ready to come to the team to talk about it. And I wanted to talk to people that I knew would get it, because a lot of my followers are also trans. Mm-hmm. And it felt at the time sort of a community for me that I had. And one of the things I think that actually you had asked, and this, I have like the line written down in my journal, actually, you had said, what can we do better in the future to continue to support you, because we didn't know any better. And so when you say now that you should have handled it differently, I think, you know, objectively, yes, but subjectively, I don't think people knew what to do. You know,
it was a bit of, a bit of a panic moment. Yeah. When it's dead silent, you know, everyone's just like, what should you do?
Right.
And so I think that's part of it. And I mean, to be honest, you handled it really well. And also having the team meeting and everyone sitting down and being like, you know, we're sorry.
Yeah.
We shouldn't, that's not okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, like looking back, of course, it's like, you know, why did we think that's okay? But, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of us, based mostly from the benefit of having you on the team, mm-hmm. have, you know, become much better at being allies and, mm-hmm. and kind of navigating that, being more willing to kind of speak up about those kinds of issues. Because if you've never had to deal with it and it's just sudden and like, you know, you're like, okay, I need to be better about this, you know, right. Obviously, you know, this is something that's obviously going to upset you.
Right.
You know, it's like not okay.
Right.
And I'm curious, you know, what the conversation would have been with that guy afterwards.
Yeah. With the guy who threw the sausages.
Yeah. Yeah.
I went and found him in like a library room somewhere. Basically the guy who called the team meeting, had said, I think you should talk to the guy who threw the sausages first. Guy who called the team meeting, guy with the sausages. This is what we call them, cause I don't want to name them, yeah. But you know, he said, you should talk to him first because I think it'd be better, you know, to have that conversation before you go and confront the team. And I agreed. So I said, okay, texted him and he immediately responded and was like, yes, let's talk, please. I had remembered as soon as he threw the sausages and there was that moment, I remember right after I left the common room, I remember him trying to catch my eye. Like I had surveyed the room to see if anybody was noticing that I was leaving, mm-hmm. Which I think that they did, but I caught his eye and I remember him like smiling at me. It felt like him trying to say like, I'm okay. Like, let's talk. Like, everything's fine. So I had felt sort of apologeticness from him, if that makes sense. Anyways, so I had the conversation. And I found him. He was in a tiny little room at the back of one of the libraries. So luckily, we had sort of like a private space to have this conversation. And I think he was immediately apologetic. He was immediately like, I went too far. I talked to some of the other guys. Everybody said that, you know, that only I could do it because we had been close friends. And the messaging had been that because he was close to me, it would have been okay. Whereas mm-hmm. if it was somebody who wasn't close to me, that would have like crossed the line essentially somehow, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also think that it would have been far worse. Like,
I also think it would. So what I explained to him was like, I get your logic. And it had the opposite effect because I was close to him, mm-hmm. because I had trusted him, I was like, wow, does he really see me that way? And when I say see me that way, for anybody who wouldn't understand, it felt like I just wasn't man enough. It felt like I had been constantly just seen as, you know, the guy with different parts, or, you know, like as frankly as possible, the guy with a vagina. And I, you know, while those things are true, I don't want to be seen as that, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to be seen as more than just my private parts, as mm-hmm. I think most people do.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of what was uncomfortable for me. And the guy, especially because I had trusted him, the thoughts that ran through my brain between the time where he threw the sausages and the time when we had the conversation was, I can't trust him anymore. We're not really friends. He doesn't really see me as part of this team. Mm-hmm. And then that, you know, expanded to the rest of the guys on the team. I thought, oh, nobody sees me as part of this team because nobody said anything. Everybody thought I was funny. So the conversation, I think, went very well. I cried for most of it. I couldn't hold it. And I was so, I don't know what the right word is. I think upset is the best word. It's not specific enough, but I think I was so betrayed, I think, mm-hmm. actually is one of the words. And then I was so immediately, I sort of like slingshot to this other end, which I was actually so heartwarmed because his you know, response was very genuine. He was very apologetic. He was like, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have done that. And now I understand, and it'll never happen again, obviously. So when we went actually to the team meeting, I don't think he actually could come to the team meeting now that I think if I remember correctly. And so you had been one of the first people to stand up and say something. Cause after I was done, I said, I'm, you know, open for any questions. Cause I really, and this was something that I did the entire time on the team, which is.
Yeah, this is, and also this also makes everything, I mean, I guess speaking for myself, but it's really easy to talk to you when you're so open, which honestly is just a huge burden on you, but you know, you doing that actually made everyone very like, you know, okay, you know, I'm learning.
Yeah.
It's my first time, you know, swimming with a trans man.
Yeah.
So, you know, we did want to do better, and we didn't, you know, you were our teammate. So we didn't want it to be like, you weren't our teammate, you know,
right.
We back each other up and we like to,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, do the right thing for each other.
Well, and that was actually what struck me. It seemed like during the team meeting, cause I remember a couple other guys standing up, many said what you said, and then a couple stood up to say, I'm really sad you didn't feel more comfortable coming to us first. And it seemed like actually most of the anger or the pain or the upset that was on the rest of the guy's side was, why didn't you trust us? What did we do that created this environment that you didn't trust us enough to tell us first? I think part of what you had actually felt at some point as well.
Oh yeah. Well, I think that there's a big like thing with the team. Like, you know, when someone has a problem with someone, we try to handle it within the team.
Right.
Instead of like, I don't know, talking to Kevin first or something like that, unless right. things get really bad.
Right, right.
Sometimes you have to talk to Kevin. But yeah, I think that there's definitely like a, and it's not always a good thing, but right. there's a big, like, you know, we need to trust each other. We are teammates and so right. we should handle it within the team and things like that. But I think that was the main thing. Mm-hmm. But I think people also kind of understood that it's not easy, no matter who you are,
yeah,
you know, to cut, like, to say anything to the team, be vulnerable sure. with the team. Sometimes you're like, you yeah. know, like, I got to come in here and, you know, if we end up using that clip, like, come, you know, come out to the team.
Right.
You know, it's hard and yeah. it's not because, you don't think these guys love you or trust you or anything like mm-hmm. that. It's just, you know, you're being vulnerable with a bunch of guys, which sure. isn't always an easy thing to do.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, there was all those things are true. And there was an added layer of feeling very alone, I think, mm-hmm. Especially because I didn't have other people like me on the team. And yes, there were other openly queer people. Another gay person was on the team at the time. But it was different, you mm-hmm. know? And especially with that moment where it was about the fact that I didn't have a penis like everybody else. I think that was like, I didn't know how else to have that conversation. And it was literally about my genitals, you know what I mean? And yeah. I think, which is, you know, I had spent some time trying to tell myself it was okay, right? Most of the time before I came to the team, and actually why I hadn't come to the team first, wasn't because necessarily I didn't trust you all to hear it. It was because I wasn't sure if I wanted to come to the team first, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if I wanted to make this a deal, right? Mm-hmm. And I had actually had a conversation with one of the other guys later, and I was like, well, it's not that big of a deal. I make fun of myself for not having a penis. And he said to me, Skylar, that's different. Like, you can make fun of yourself for whatever you want. But when the whole world is calling you not a man because of this one thing, because you don't have a penis, we shouldn't have a teammate doing that to you as well. Mm. And that struck me that A, he recognized that, and B, that you know, he was saying that to me, and I was like, yeah, you're right. We shouldn't have that. And that's why I feel this way. But we had this, you know, one of the things that I, when I look back on this moment, when I've reflected on this moment, it started as the worst moment on the team, I think, that I'd ever had, feeling totally alone. Like, I didn't, you know, couldn't trust anybody. And it actually turned into, first of all, one of the best practices. My journal says I had the best practice that I've ever had on the team so far afterwards. And I think it actually ended up being one of the most positive memories of my time on the team, because I felt so heard. And as I have drifted into becoming more of an educator these days and talking to people about trans inclusion and teaching all these trainings, that's actually what I tell people. It's not about not making the mistake, but it's how we shift after the mistake has been made, mm-hmm. right? What do we do to adjust afterwards? So kind of shifting forwards from that moment, after I graduated, you and I actually went to a march together. So, you know, this was, when was this? 2019, I think.
Yeah. Remember?
Yeah.
It was pre-COVID. So
yeah. Pre-COVID, which there's
that's how I mark things now.
Yeah. But there's not a lot of time after I graduated before COVID. So it had to be 2019. Mm-hmm. So in the fall of 2019, there was a big march in DC. It was the National Trans March in DC. And I think, I don't know how, do you remember how I reached out? Did I text you directly, or was it a group text, or?
I think you texted a few of the DC guys, mm-hmm. and were just like, hey, you know, I'm coming down for this march, you know, yeah. if anyone wants to join.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah, probably. I'm wondering what went through your mind when I texted you that, because at that time you had been off the team for 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. 2019. And we hadn't been the closest in college, right? I think honestly, the most time we spent together was probably at set.
Yeah, yeah.
One-on-one, I mean. So yeah. I'm curious what went through your mind when I texted you that.
So, I mean, I guess I was just, one, I always want to support my teammates, and I also want to be, you know, a good ally. And so, I mean, why wouldn't I go and march with you? Mm. You know, that's kind of a least I can do kind of situation. Mm. And it's also just great seeing you. So I also just wanted to see you to say, hey,
yeah.
Cause even though we didn't spend a ton of time on the team when we were there, but you know, you're still like a teammate. Like if you see any of your teammates, you're like, right. Oh, hey, like, you know, like
yeah.
to some extent, these are the guys you kind of know the most about.
Right. Yeah.
aside from like other close friends and things sure. like that. But, you know, so it was just, I wanted to support you, mm-hmm. Especially coming out of college and you get older and you kind of learn more and you're like, wow, you know, and like going back to those things, like, yeah, we could have done some things better, you know? And I think that's fairly obvious. Mm. So it was just, and honestly, I was also, I was kind of taken aback a little bit that you would think, you know, to have me, even for this, like to have me come and talk with you about these things and that you feel comfortable enough to talk with me or invite me to march with you. That was very kind of heartwarming and kind of an honor to me that at least you felt comfortable enough to ask me these questions and to ask me to come march with you. And I mean, it feels good to have, I don't know, people to trust you to kind of do these things with you.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, even thinking back on it almost like makes me tear up a bit because it meant a lot to me that you came. I think I talk very positively about my team, my time on the team and my team, our team, because it was, I think, an overwhelming positive experience, especially from what I expected. But I also really struggled on the team for a lot of the time there. And there were these sort of glowing moments of connection. You know, my best friend still of all time is Kevin Dye from the team. and so I got so much out of being on that team, and I spent 4 years often feeling like I was teetering on belonging, right? Either I felt like I didn't belong, which was my freshman year. And then there were just moments where I stepped in and I was like, okay, I do kind of belong. And I have so many great memories, but it is the great memories that are sort of it's not the outliers. It's just that most of the time I felt like I was fighting for some kind of belonging. And a lot of it, by the way, is internal, right? It was an internal battle because I had nobody else to look to be like, there are other trans athletes out here, right? And somebody else understands my experience. It was always, like you said, it was me educating other people. And it wasn't that I constantly felt like I didn't belong, but it was that I didn't feel like I could bring all of my transness to the pool, if that makes sense. And I think it was, again, like I said, internal. A lot of it was an internal battle and a loneliness battle. There just wasn't another trans guy on the team.
Trans guy swimmer.
Yeah, anywhere, or any other. You know, like, yeah. Literally zero other trans guy swimmers at the time.
Yeah.
So I felt very alone. And I think I only started inviting people into my transness, actually, the way that I have now, because it's one thing for me to be on the team and say, yeah, I'm taking testosterone, this is what it's like, or, you know, I'm transgender, here's what it means, right? And it's another thing to invite you, for example, into what is sort of like a home for me. Well, here literally you're in my home, but even more so than that, to a march. Because at a march, I am my most trans self. I'm like only trans in that moment. And it's such an important and beautiful part of myself that I didn't feel I could truly share on the team because I wanted people to understand and I wanted people to connect with me. And there's sort of like an initial layer that I felt like I needed to provide. And then that was it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so when I texted you, I actually was nervous. I was very nervous to text you because I wasn't sure what the response would be. Not because I didn't, again, trust you to be a good teammate, but because I think people are nervous to go to those kinds of events. I think people are not sure how to present themselves. I think they're not sure how to be an ally. I think some people are afraid of being seen as also trans or something, and whatever that means to them, I'm not sure. But I'm always, I guess, and maybe this is just me, but I'm always a little bit nervous when I ask allies to be allies. So it was really touching for me that you came. And I remember you also brought, I think, your partner, right? Your partner came.
Oh, yeah. My wife, Eileen. Yeah.
And it was such a beautiful event. We had such a good time. And I'm curious if you, I don't know, what do you think about what I've said and also the actually being at the march?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where this is a space that, I mean, I'm a straight cishet male, you know, white too. So, you know, I go to these spaces and I'm not, you know, it's a very safe space for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I'm always most nervous that in those spaces I could make people feel uncomfortable, which is kind of a wild switch because I feel like a lot of, you know, queer people could feel like they could make other people uncomfortable with them being in like very straight, you know, cis places or something like that.
Sure.
So it's one of those things where I don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable or make other people feel like they can't be who they want to be. In front of me for whatever reason. And so I tried to kind of, and another reason why, like, you inviting me into this space was so, you know, it meant a lot to me that you trusted me enough to come in there and not, I hope you thought that I wouldn't make people uncomfortable.
No, you did great.
It's not that hard to just be nice. So there's that, I think, is the biggest thing, like going to marches like that. It's not wanting to intrude on a space where I thought I was welcome and everyone was extremely welcoming and everything, but you don't want to like overstep and, or, you know, I don't know, you want to be there for other people and understand that you're supporting them in this march.
Right.
That you are not, like, you know, necessarily the point of this march, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're reflecting on sort of one of the tenets of being a good ally is to not take up space that should be taken up by the people that we're fighting for, right? Mm-hmm. And we can translate to lots of different, you know, movements. But I think I was struck by how comfortable you seemed actually at the march, and how you were just kind of, you're there, we were chatting. I think your wife seemed to have a good time as well, and she connected with my friend who came, my other friend. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, when I go to those marches, they're so tough in many different ways, because first of all, we're not marching because we're excited. We're marching because we don't have rights, right?
Yeah.
We're marching because there's 400 plus anti-trans bills that are going on that are trying to criminalize pretty much every part of our existence. So there's a devastation of why we're marching, but there's also this like collective, so there's that collective grief, but there's also this collective joy of being in community with each other. Mm-hmm. And I always find so much power from that. And it honestly, like I've not gone to a single march where I haven't cried at some point, because it's so powerful to witness our own power as like a trans and queer community. Mm-hmm. So I was curious if you felt that, if you felt any of that sort of community.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's very powerful to see a group of people that are like-minded and are just trying to, you know, fight for their rights and being there to help support that. It's a very cool and like almost like illuminating thing into humanity and trying to strive for a better society and what that struggle is like for a lot of people, because, you know, there are a lot of speeches of, you know, what people have gone through.
Right.
And obviously I would never have heard those stories
right.
if I hadn't gone.
Yeah.
And it's a really powerful thing to watch people kind of go out there and like speak their truth and try and rally a group of people to say, you know, we deserve to be here and to live as we want to live.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty cool, powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, I always say that the community, the connectedness, the power from the ancestors, whatever you want to call it, is like palpable at these kinds of marches. That's something I felt at Black Lives Matter marches as well, where it's just like, you can feel how much people are fighting. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody can sort of like be energized by that to some degree, or reminded, like, I mean, I think actually what you said is even more powerful, reminded of humanity, right? And common humanity too. Mm-hmm. That kind of brings me to where we'll start to wrap up. And one of the questions I have in wrapping up is what is the difference between what you expected of me before you met me, right? When you were first told there's this trans guy, and what maybe stereotypes you might've had, mm-hmm. Versus what you now know about me, like, as somebody who actually you've been on team with, that you actually know, right? We've hung out outside of the team. Like, mm-hmm. I guess, can you take us through what you first thought of me versus what you now? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, to start, when I first found out you were joining the team, and this is just bad, but I was like,
please, let's hear the bad.
Yeah, right. So then, put myself on blast a little bit. I was like, is he fast enough to be on the team? And I looked up your times and everything. I was like, oh, shit, you're actually faster than some of the guys who were already on the team. And so that was a big like, oh, wow. Okay. So he can make, you know, you can be on the team.
Yeah.
And then I guess I didn't know what to expect. Like personality wise, I don't think I had any, I thought you were just going to kind of be a person, I guess. I don't know. I didn't really expect anything to be weird or anything like that. I mean, there's the locker room, like, I don't know what the locker room would be like, but mm-hmm. I mean, we weren't exactly all just like walking around naked all the time.
Yeah.
So no, that was never really a thing. No, it was kind of strange actually, if you were doing that, people were like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So there was nothing like, there's like no concern on any of those kinds of things that I think people get really upset about today.
Yeah.
But then you were ever doing it, like, you know, being around a trans person, it's actually like such a non-issue.
Right. Yeah. Most trans people also don't like to be naked.
Yeah. Most people generally aren't naked in front of random people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I just to spin off for a second, I'll bring you back to your question, but the concept that trans people are wandering in bathrooms completely naked, first of all, exposing themselves to the masses, which is a common current attack on Leah. Mm-hmm. I have no idea when she would ever be completely naked, exposing herself, walking around a bathroom. Most trans people are terrified of bathrooms. Like, I spent most of my childhood absolutely terrified of the bathroom. And I know that most trans feminine people have the same experience, because we're far more likely to be victims of violence in the bathroom than we ever are to perpetuate it. So just like a quick fact, which I know you know, but I think is important when we're talking this topic, because most of us weren't walking around naked anyways, but definitely not me.
Yeah. I was, so that, yeah, that was, but you know, I think you really, you were an incredible teammate and so extremely generous with, you know, your time and educating us and, you know, all of that. I was extremely impressed with how open you were. That I didn't expect. Okay. That's actually a big thing I didn't expect.
Yeah.
You were very open. You were very willing to answer questions. And you were very willing to, you know, kind of be pretty vulnerable with the team pretty early on.
Yeah.
With, you know, yourself and who you are, which I think is very brave and probably very difficult.
It was a very conscious choice as well, right? I had up until that point noticed that if I was around people who thought they couldn't ask questions, that they would be uncomfortable. And so I made a very conscious decision to say, okay, well, I will then be uncomfortable and I will answer the questions so that other people can then feel more comfortable by asking. So there's not this like red tape around me, you know? And when they feel comfortable because they can ask me questions, then I will eventually also feel comfortable because they feel comfortable. And it was this sort of back and forth kind of thing. But I will say, and so a sort of side question to what you're asking, sorry, I keep interrupting you, but is what about the people who don't want to do that, right? There's so many more trans people that don't want to answer questions the way I did and don't have the energy, don't have the trust. Because part of it is also that I trusted you all to not be assholes and to ask me questions honestly, but kindly.
To respect you and
Yeah. And that was there. That people didn't ask me disrespectful questions. And I think that allowed me, like it was two-sided, right? I trusted you all to ask like good questions and to be kind, and you all ask decent questions, and for the most part, we're very kind. And so we could have this conversation where I felt comfortable educating. It was still a burden on me, but I, you know, still did it. And I think overall, I would never go back and change it. I don't regret it at all because I think it made us comfortable, right? As you're as you're saying. But what about people who don't, right, who can't do that or who can't answer the questions, don't feel comfortable? I also am very comfortable articulating myself. It's something that I would consider like a skill of mine. And so that allows me to be able to answer the questions. But what would you say, you know, to maybe a guy, maybe like yourself, you know, who is trying to welcome another trans person on team, who that trans person is not comfortable answering questions?
I mean, I guess I would say there are resources to educate yourself on. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, you know, so it's, and you shouldn't expect anyone to owe you anything or owe you any answers. You were, and again, this is what was most surprising because I really didn't expect you to be so open with us, which it did make everyone feel a lot more comfortable.
Sure.
And I think, I mean, as much as like things like, you know, a lot of, there are a lot of problems with the anti-trans bills and stuff like that right now.
Yeah.
But I think that there's also more resources now too.
Yeah, totally.
Because I mean, when I was in like high school, it really wasn't really a question that you got very often or even talked about.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you could find resources like back when.
I know I couldn't.
Yeah. So that's a great point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that now, you know, if you know what's happening and you want to be welcoming and all of that, you should educate yourself and also just not expect them. And when whenever they want to open up to you, then, you know, great, but you shouldn't expect it. And it's, again, if it's your teammate, like if you have a problem with, you know, them being trans, like it's kind of a strange thing. Just go out there and like play the sport together. Like you can make the sport the focus of your relationship and you don't have to focus on, you know, the, I guess them being trans.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that was also a great way that, you know, we were able to bond all of us as a team because you're all out there doing the same sport.
Right.
And to some extent, you know, you're kind of, and it, for me, you know, you're like my teammate first for anything and a swimmer with me.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh yeah, he's also trans.
Right.
You know? So it's, you know, if you, I'm trying to think of a way to word this, but maybe if you're uncomfortable at first, you know, focus on just being their teammate and then be like, oh wow, you know, they work hard, you know, they're a great teammate. So, you know, well, I can get past this or I don't know if you have any hesitations about, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think what you're saying it's is actually, it's an earlier comment that you made before. You said it's a common humanity, honestly, right?
Yeah.
When you said focus on what you're there to do, swim in this case, and who you are, teammate, I think it's about saying, okay, what actually do I have in common with this person instead of focusing on the one thing
that
I don't.
You're much better at articulating things. That's what I mean, you know? Yeah. You're there with a common shared goal.
Right.
You know, you can let that be your relationship at first until, you know, they're more willing to talk to you about the struggles that they have, which I'm sure they are having probably, if especially you know, on higher levels of, I think in sports specifically, just because that's such a big thing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think that the ability to connect with somebody because you've decided just to connect where you can, and then to let the other connections come, I think is what most people miss with trans people. Because they'll go right, especially the well-intentioned people will come up to me and they'll ask me all these kinds of very invasive questions, and they won't start with like, oh, you're a person. Mm-hmm. And I'm an educator, so in many ways that is like part of what I do. But in a person-to-person, when people ask me really intense questions about my genitals or about my family history or about my surgeries or whatever, I think they're missing, there's this gap of like intimacy that they've missed, right? Mm-hmm. Of saying like, oh, actually, hold on, let me start back at like, oh, you're human, let me see where I can connect, instead of let me dive into all the things that I don't understand first. So I think it's also a suspension of not understanding, right? Saying, okay, I don't understand everything. Let me just start where I do understand, in our case, swimming. Mm-hmm. But going back to what you're talking about, different expectations. So one of them was, like you said, was that I was more open than you expected. Was there anything else that struck you as like different from what you expected a trans person to be?
You know, I guess I didn't have a lot of expectations to begin with, other than it would probably be really uncomfortable for you at first. Mm. And you kind of, I'm sure you felt very uncomfortable, but you really didn't make it seem like you were uncomfortable.
Oh, good. I succeeded.
Yeah. Yeah.
In masking it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which also made everyone else more comfortable. But again, this is just putting a lot of burden on you. Cause that had to be tough. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to go in with any expectations when, you know, it's never been in a scenario where, you know, I had a trans teammate. So I was pretty, I guess I didn't really know what to expect.
Right.
But I didn't expect you to be so wonderful. And so, I mean, like it really was, you know, it was a great experience, to like be able to have you on the team and kind of educate. I mean, this must have been really tough, like educate 30 other guys on what being trans is, which is a burden that you should not have had to undertake.
I chose to in many ways though. Yeah. And I'm glad I did. And I think like, I always straddle this tension because I'm so glad that I was able to, and that I had the privilege to be as open as I was. Cause I do think it's a privilege for many different reasons, whether it be because I was, you know, articulate because of the education that I've had, whether it's because I was going to therapy and when things were sucking on the team, I'd go and rant to my therapist about it, whether it was because I had other friends and family that supported me, right? Lots of privilege to allow me the emotional grounding to be open. Mm-hmm. I don't ever regret that and would never change it. And I have this other side of me that's, I'm expected at this point in my life to represent all trans people, not because I can, but because that's the expectation. And so not every trans person wants to or can do this openness thing. And that's valid. And that's, as you've repeated, that shouldn't be the expectation for trans people. And I don't think it was the expectation of the team either.
No.
In fact, as you said, it was not the expectation that I would be open, but it's productive. And so I have this like, you know, this tension between what's productive for me to do and what's valid, you know, for me to feel. You've mentioned a couple of things that you've learned from your experience on the team. And one of the things I have thought, because while I did educate guys on the team, I did not spend every, you know, waking moment on the team, like educating people. Yeah. A lot of the education, I think, from what I've heard, right, what people have told me was implicit. It wasn't actually me sitting down and being like, this is what a trans person is. Like, this is what I need. Yes, I did that every once in a while. But for the most part, it was proximity to a trans person that just said, ah, here's a trans person. He's actually kind of just a person.
Exactly.
So I was wondering if you could sort of encapsulate what you did learn, if you can, from being a teammate of a trans guy.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think what you just said is probably the biggest thing. You're saying, oh, he's just a person just trying to, you know, be a good swimmer. And, there's really nothing different. Truly. I mean, there's really nothing different. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, like being a teammate and like going out, you know, to team events and parties and stuff like that, team dinners and everything, like there really was absolutely
trans
zero.
People have to eat too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's absolutely, well, like, you know, but you would come to the team dinners and there was no, like, I guess, disconnect really.
Sure.
And so that was probably, the biggest thing was that, and the education came when people made mistakes, which is the really hard thing to do, I think. Mm. But yeah, the biggest thing is just, you know, recognizing that you're just a normal guy trying to do normal things. Like, you know, like there's nothing really that crazy or special about having a trans teammate. It's just, you know, another teammate. Hmm. And I think that was, I guess, yeah, one of the biggest educations is, you know, just respect pronouns, respect the person, and don't dig deep into it. It's something that probably don't want to talk about, because there are definitely things that you don't want to talk about with relation to, you know, I don't know, like genitalia and stuff like that. It's kind of a strange series of questions to ask someone. So why would you ask them? Like, would you ask a normal person that?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. It's like, oh, this is very, very normal. You know, not to say that you're normal, you're extraordinary, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering, you might've not meant it, but you said, would you ask a normal person that? Do you want to ever?
Oh, sorry. It's okay. No.
We don't have to put that in there. We're all good. Okay. No, don't. It's okay. I honestly, sometimes I make the same mistake. And when I say normal, it's what the reason, and this is because I know you. So here's, I mean, this is a moment where I trust that you know that I'm not abnormal, and that you wouldn't call trans people not normal, but we use words to communicate to people, like normal, to reflect what other people think is normal. And you know, so to explain away your mistake, that's sort of what I see. And one of the things that is, one of the things I find important, is trying to understand where people are coming from, but it's hard to do that when it's random people, you know, that you don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the context I was thinking of in my head was like, you know, on the team there was just, there was only cishet guys.
Right.
So it was like, that was the normal.
The norm.
Which I'm sorry. That was.
I'm not offended. One of the things I think also that is important that I love to tell to people who are allies is we never, like when we make mistakes, especially if it was with like somebody that trusts you, right? Like we can just apologize and move on. And I think that a lot of people get stuck on the mistake they make, you know, and I think I think that was one of the things actually that struck me about the team is that we were able to move on, right? One of my biggest fears about, for example, talking about the sausages moment, was that I was going to make a big deal of it and I would forever, you know, wear that on my sleeve, you know? And it was so well moved on from that I actually forgot about it at certain times, right? Like I would forget that was a moment. I've been working on a book and recently I like had to dig it out of my brain to find it. And then I was like, oh my God, that horrible thing happened. And actually it was this really good thing in the end. And anyways, my point is like, I think that we did a really good job on the team moving on. And I saw that with other people making mistakes too. And, you know, sending the wrong text to the wrong stream or, you know, saying something stupid to somebody else. I found that we did a good job with that.
Yeah. There was a good amount of like, we trust each other and we love each other. And so, apologize, move on.
Do you think there was something unique about our team that allowed us to do that? Because I've traveled around the country, given over 450 speeches now. And the thing that strikes people the most is two things. One, Kevin and his like easy reception of me, because he really was just like, sure. If you identify as a guy and you want to swim and you're already into Harvard, why not swim for the men's team here? Right. Mm-hmm. And he was really that simple about it. There was no other frills or whatever. And then you all were kind of the same where it was like, are you going to try, get good grades and, you know, swim well in the pool. But it was so easy in many ways. And why do you think our team, because everybody I've talked to has been like, why do you think that happened with your team? And my answer has always been like, well, I think we had a really good group of guys and I got lucky. And I think I was really open and I think that helped, but those are my only answers.
Yeah. And we, there were also, I mean, we talked a little bit before, but you know, there were queer people on the team before too.
Yeah.
So that was like already a normal thing.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was normal for us to have, a queer community on the team.
Yeah.
It wasn't like different or anything like that.
Right.
I think a lot of people actually, there are probably a lot, we'll probably have a lot more queer teammates than they realize.
100%.
Yeah. So that was already like an established, we kind of guys knew like to kind of be respectful.
Right.
In a lot of things. So, you know, you getting, you know, joining the team, it was not that different, in that context, but of course it's a little different, you know, but, it was the group of guys were already kind of ready to be very accepting.
They were primed, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think there are other teams, you know, and I've heard some bad stories about like other teams, some teams don't have a great reception.
Right.
I think swimming also is also a bit better. I think that it's usually a little bit more open. And well, you know, we I guess can do have some toxic masculinity for sure.
Yeah.
I think that there are teams that struggle with it, with accepting queer people a little more.
Well, I was wondering if having queer guys on the team, me included, but queer guys period, and then adding me as a trans man, if that affected any of like your views on masculinity in general and sort of like manhood, did it invite you to think about sort of like your manhood?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I don't know. I think I was primed to accept you as like a man on the team already. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like the toxic masculinity kind of stuff where like, you're like, oh, you have to do this. And like, you know, if you're uncomfortable, like who cares, you know, be a man. And it's like, no, like you should, you know, try not to make people uncomfortable and bring them in and respect them and things like that. And so I think that's probably one of the big things where, and honestly, it's harder to kind of be vulnerable with people and to be open with them and try and respect everything instead of just like kind of going stone cold and just being like, we're just gonna, you know what I mean?
Put a shield up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. One of the things I found being very open about, nobody I know doesn't, like everybody knows me, knows that I'm trans. And I found that people seem more comfortable with me because like once they know that I'm trans, especially it's almost as if it invites more vulnerability from somebody else. And I wonder if it's because of the transness. I wonder if it's because they don't see me as, like for men, I wonder if it's because they see me as like somehow less man. I don't know what it is, but, maybe it's because being trans is vulnerable and vulnerability invite vulnerability. I'm not sure, but I'm curious if, I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
I think it's just that vulnerability invites vulnerability, but it's not just, if any guy is vulnerable with you, like to be honest, a lot of guys aren't vulnerable with each other.
Yeah. So it's not something that we're taught.
No. Yeah. And so if you know, a guy, like some my best friends on the team, like when you're vulnerable about something, you know, they will, you know, start offering up their vulnerability too, because you can be vulnerable with each other, but it's much tougher if it's like a one-way street.
Right.
So if someone goes first, you know, being vulnerable, it's much easier for the other person to be like, hey, all right, you know, I'm actually really struggling with this. I haven't told anyone and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think that, vulnerability invites vulnerability, but I think it's kind of across all of guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I agree. I think that also reminds me of just generally like even the vulnerability to stand up, for example, in the face of the sausages incident. Once somebody said something, everybody else was also like, oh yeah, I didn't think that was right either. Or like, I also was struggling with that moment, or I also didn't know what to do. And you had said something like, Skylar, we laughed because you laughed and we didn't know what else to do. And so there was this like really one of the heartwarming things about the moment is there was this upwelling from the whole team, from one person saying, hey, that wasn't okay. Everybody was like, wait, actually, I didn't think it was okay either. I was also uncomfortable, kind of inviting that vulnerability from everybody. And I guess the reason I'm asking this question is for like a takeaway for anybody who's listening is what helps a person, specifically a man and maybe specifically a cis man like yourself, what helps you or anybody take that one step to be the first vulnerable person, right? To be the person that says, actually, I have something to say. What do you think helps people do that?
You know, it's a tough question because to some extent you've got to put yourself out there and be like, no, that's not right. And you don't know how other people are going to react. Mm. And I don't know what would help you do that. I think you have to decide, okay, I want to be like, that's not okay. You kind of have to make like a kind of moral decision. Like I really need to say something. Mm. And I don't think there's a way to make it that much easier. Mm. Maybe you could, practice. You can maybe also talk to other people in a smaller group and then be like, guys, right? Like that was not right.
Right.
And then when you go to a larger group, you already know you have a few people who are behind you. Which I think is kind of also like a little bit like how I think that next meeting on the team was a little bit. I think there was discussions outside of before that meeting where, you know, people were kind of being like, well, that was not good.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have to do it and stand up for what you believe in.
Yeah.
And if you know there are a few people that will get behind you, you can talk to them before, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, you know, you kind of have to trust everyone that you're talking to about it when you stand up,
right?
That they're going to at least respect your opinion and respect you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean, that's a question I don't know if I could answer.
Well, I think you did a good job trying. And I think that, you know, at the end of the day, there's sort of two sides of it. There's the internal battle, right? The morals, where you say, okay, what do I want? What kind of person do I want to be? And what actions does that necessitate? And then the next part is, how can I gather some kind of support before I go to a bigger stage? And I think that applies to a lot of big things that we need to speak into the world, whether it be standing up for somebody as an ally, or whether it be being a queer person and coming out, right? That's the advice that you gave just now is the same advice I give people when they're coming out. I say, figure out what you need to do, and then get a small group of people, whether it be one person, two people, three people, before you then go and share it, you know, wider. I think that's great. And I think, you know, to wrap this up, Jack, you have been, you know, a really important ally to me in my time, and especially actually post college. And you've always been, you know, when I told you that, you know, I got married, you were so excited. You were like, come bring your wife to like have, you know, come hang out with us. And that just felt, I mean, I don't know why anybody would not be excited for somebody, but there was just like, there's this big excitement that I felt from you. And I've always felt that you've been a cheerleader, or a, I don't know if that's the right word, but like a huge supporter of me. Especially after college, and that has meant a lot to me. And so I'm curious, kind of, as we wrap up, if there's anything else you want to share about what allyship means to you, and like what being a supporter to anybody whose identity you don't share, but I suppose in this case to a trans person specifically.
Yeah. Oh, so that's a good question. Being an ally it's a really, like, I derive a lot of like internal pleasure to have, you know, that I support you and, you know, I love you as a teammate and as a friend. And it makes it, it really is, being a good ally is really just kind of loving that person and trying to be respectful. And, you know, it's a really cool thing to, cause again, I mean, we weren't super good friends at first on the team. And then kind of that relationship grows, and I feel like, you know, I'm trying to be a good ally, and you being very open and inviting me to these like spaces, and you know, it makes you feel really good to know that you are helping in some way, or at least helping someone who was struggling to, you know, feel better about themselves, to feel more supported in their community and accepted in, you know, on the team or whatever it is, you know, selfishly, it feels really good to be a great ally, you know, not that I'm a great ally, but, you know, it's,
I think you are.
Thanks. Trying, but it's a nice thing to be able to support someone. And I think a lot of people feel that way, you know, and it doesn't, and I think that extends to like a lot of just friendships too. Like you love seeing your friends succeed and feel comfortable with themselves. And so if you can extend that, especially to people who kind of need that support even more, you know, it's a great thing to do, and it's really not that hard to do.
Well, I think that's, you know, to add on to what you said, like the thing that you do well is, listen and then update. Right. And I think it's evident to me that you care, which is another reason that I feel comfortable with you, because I think there are probably people out there that are not as clearly caring. And I think that caring carries us through and carries us through mistakes, carries us through any kind of like bumps that might happen, because that's bound to happen because we're different people with different experiences. In many ways, we have very similar experiences, right? But in some ways we don't. And I think that's sort of a conundrum of honestly humanity, is that there are always things that are different about people, and how can we navigate those things with learning, with respect, with understanding when we can, in a way that invites both people to continue to be in community with each other. I think that you are also humble in your allyship, and I think that's really important too. I think that a lot of people are like, I'm an ally. And then what happens when they do that is their title of ally is more important than the actions of ally, right? And I've seen people do that where they, like, if God forbid I tell them that they said something that's wrong, or that hurt my feelings, whether guarding if it's wrong or not, and they'll get upset. You know, they'll be like, oh, why did you, I'm an ally. Don't you know why I support you? And I'm like, okay, but if you supported me, wouldn't you just update yourself? But I think you did that well. And I think it's about humility, and it's about being able to be like, oh, sorry, my bad, right? Why are you able to do that? I don't think a lot of white cis men are good at that, to be clear with you, or to be frank.
Oh, really? So I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question to praise yourself.
I try. you got it.
No, I think, I mean, being open and understanding that, like, mistakes happen.
Right.
And you should always just trust, like, you know, your friend to be like, hey, you know, no, don't do that. And you're like, oh, sorry. You know, like, be constantly willing to learn and update. Yeah, I guess it's a willingness to learn and understanding you don't know everything. Mm. And I think that's, I mean, I think that's also just a great way to kind of live life, to understand your own limits in some way.
Yeah.
That, you know, you don't always come first, and it, which I think is part of it sometimes. A lot of people have like very me-centric kind of personality sometimes. Mm. And just being willing to, you know, I guess I guess humble. Yeah, sure. Be humble with yourself and think through, you know, all right, I need to be better for this person, so I'll just do that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a bad thing to like redirect, you know, your, you know, view of the world, which I think some people kind of struggle with, just like,
sure,
because they put themselves as they kind of build themselves up to be this perfect thing, and understanding that, I mean, like, no one's perfect.
Right.
So I guess that's kind of it's almost like a vulnerability with yourself. Like, I need to be better for myself. I need to understand that I make mistakes and it's not the end of the world.
Right.
That you have to always be willing to learn and be better.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, what I learned that first in swimming, actually, because it was very easy in swimming to be like, all right, well, I did that wrong. Let me fix it and move on. Mm-hmm. Instead of being like, oh my God, I'm a terrible swimmer. I can never swim again. Right. Yeah. It was just like, okay, you know, tighter off the walls, one more kick off the walls, whatever. Let me just move on. Right. Do you think that swimming helped you doing that too?
I think sports in general, a big thing where you kind of, number one, I think swimming is a big thing like this. You know who you're faster than and who's faster than you. Mm. And so you like, some people in other sports that are, you know, maybe like diving or like gymnastics, where it's like graded and you're like, well, the judge was just messing with me and I was better. Or
it's very objective sports.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know that you were like, this sounds kind of like bad, but like, you know, you were slower and you need to get better at it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a pretty hard sport because you like, you also know that this person's better than you. So if you want to get better than them, you have to work at this, you have to change this. And I think sports in general also just allow you to realize that you have flaws and so you have to fix them. Like, and in that same way, you know, your personality can have flaws, I guess.
Or allyship can make mistakes and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But the important thing is that, you know, you don't shut down, you move past it and continue to try and, you know, be their friend. And to some extent, like, I think that being an ally is being a friend first. Like when you're an ally, you're usually being an ally for someone that you know. I think that's how a lot of people get into allyship.
Sure.
And then when you get past that, like, you're just a friend to that person. And then when you go and, you know, you see someone doing something wrong with someone else, and they're like, you know, I don't know, if you see someone misgender, it's like, hey, no, like, that's, because to some extent now it's like, if I hear someone misgender someone, I'm like, hey, like, that's not okay. But I feel like it's because I support you and everything. And so to some extent, like, when I hear that, you're like, oh, like, no, that's not, you know, I know how my friend would feel about it. So you shouldn't do it. And even if you don't have a queer friend, you should also know that you have friends, and when they get their feelings hurt, you don't like it, you know? So to some extent, it's like being a friend, and then like an ally is kind of like just like an all-encompassing term, basically.
Yeah.
You support them as a friend.
Right.
That's the thing I guess I don't really totally understand with the ally kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I think the ally just distinguishes whether or not you share that identity, right? Like, I could have a trans friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And if I'm a friend to another trans person, and yes, I'm an ally to that person, but I'm also trans, right? Yeah. So like it's a little different. So I think ally we use specifically to denote people who are supporters of an identity group that is marginalized, that they don't share that identity with, right?
Okay.
But I think what you're saying is crucial and is central to what allyship is. It is about treating other people as a friend. And when we say friend, it doesn't mean that you need to know the person necessarily, mm-hmm. but it's how would you treat a friend, mm-hmm. right? What would you protect a friend for? How would you stand up for a friend regardless of like their identity background or gender history or what have you. So I think that's a great note to end on, which is that being an ally is an extension of being a friend.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for spending this time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I love you and I'm just grateful for your friendship.
Oh, I love you too. I'm grateful for our friendship. Yeah. This is